My greased up head went into the pumpkin, no problem, but...
It won't budge.
I can't get it out. Try again.
I mean, I could try destroying the pumpkin.
No, 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 no!
But as Jim and I discovered...
No!
Any blow to the pumpkin itself could prove fatal to me.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again, coming off a disgusting loss at home to the Arizona Cardinals. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So, first things first, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Tell us something nice in the reviews. And of course, this episode is brought to you by Overlay DFS. I've been telling you guys about them every week. It is the new, cool, easy way to win money playing DFS. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to OverlayDFS.com, or you're going to download the Overlay app in the App Store. It's on the Apple App Store as well as the Android Google Play Store. It's easy, right? You go on DraftKings, you go on FanDuel, you have all these sharks entering hundreds of lineups using algorithms. This is easy. You go in, you enter the $22 contest. You pick 12 entries, 12 head-to-head matchups. Some examples this week. You have Russell Wilson versus Deshaun Watson, Baker Mayfield versus Daniel Jones, Josh Jacobs versus Derrick Henry, Mike Evans versus Tyler Lockett, Odell Beckham versus Allen Robinson. You're going to pick 12. You're going to also pick 3 alternates, and you're going to rank them. You win the matchup by whichever player you pick has the most fantasy points at the end of the week, and... all you have to do is finish in the top 10% and you win 9 times your money. So a $22 entry will pay you out $180. It's easy. It's fun. I've been doing it. You should do it too. Go sign up, overlaydfs.com. All right. That's it for the sponsors. Weiss, I know we're both not doing so well this week, but...
Not at all.
Yeah. You know, on top of this Giants loss... I vaguely tweeted about this like a week ago. I tore my meniscus in my left knee. So
are you serious?
Oh yeah, playing soccer. So kudos to me for podcasting on a torn meniscus.
First Zion, then you.
Exactly, and you know, obviously, very similar body types, of course. So, you know, yeah. Maybe, jokes, of course. I could use to, you know, maybe lose a couple pounds like Zion. Anyway, yeah. So I might need some leg surgery in the coming weeks, but that's TBD. Insult to injury. Watching the game at the bar, trying to forget about my leg hurting me, and then the Giants just let us down.
It was a bad sports weekend for me.
Oh yeah. The Giants. And let me tell you, I got a lot of good feedback on your Yankees rant. People like that a lot.
It just hurts, man, because it's like I'm just a fan and I know what we need.
Yeah.
But
anyway, we forget about the Yankees. Go Astros tonight, though. I got them for the series and also -1.5 tonight. Back to the Giants. I mean, you can start with the coaching. Start with the coaching. Coming out as flat as they did with 10 days to prepare for Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray and to go down 17-0 right out of the gates. I mean, terrible. Absolutely terrible.
I mean... yeah, the thing is that this was one of those games where the Giants weren't playing a team that was extremely more talented than them.
Right, it was a winnable game.
They were playing a team that's sort of in their tier when it comes to talent. You know, rookie quarterback.
Yep.
You know, lackluster offensive line.
Yep.
Bad defense. That was actually ranked worse than the Giants coming into Sunday.
The worst receiving core, you could argue.
Yeah. Yes, and. And the Giants just come out after 10 days for preparation, getting back a healthy Saquon Barkley and Evan Ingram, and they just look like absolute shit. And for me, that's on the coaching staff.
Yeah.
Right out of the gate, Arizona gets 14 quick points. I think they got 17 quick points, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
and then the Giants were able to get a touchdown drive, and it just is a lot to overcome for a rookie quarterback in the rain.
Exactly. You said it. In the rain, even at home, it doesn't matter. You go down 17 points early, it's going to be tough to crawl out of that hole unless you're like the Chiefs or the Patriots.
And they were just not prepared at all. And then some of the play calling by Pat Shurmur, it made absolutely no sense. They're not as aggressive as they should be. They're not putting their rookie quarterback
in
position.
They're not creative at all.
It's just a lot of just going through the motions with this team right now. They're not. Listen, I know they're depleted talent wise, but the Arizona Cardinals scored 3 touchdowns, rushing touchdowns, on the same exact play.
Yeah,
it was literally the same exact play, and the Cardinals scored 3 times on it. And they also got 1 big chunk play, 2 out of it. I mean, it's inexcusable. And on top of all that, you're facing a rookie head coach in Cliff Kingsbury. And Pat Shurmur got outcoached. And listen, man, this is one of those games where if you were a guy that thought Pat Shurmur is not the right guy for this job, then
nail in the coffin.
Sunday just was the nail in the coffin. Ha ha, I told you so.
Yep.
If you're one of those guys like me who had your doubts, you know,
exactly,
but you still wanted, you still felt like there were some other, you know, there's other issues involved in this. It's not just the coaching.
Yep.
Well, Sunday proved to you that, you know what? Coaching is still a serious problem for the Giants right now. And until Pat Shurmur proves that he's capable, and I don't care about the win-loss record as much, because I think what happened in Cleveland is separate from what's going on here. Pat Shurmur, he has to. I've never, as a fan, yet he's coached this team for 23 games.
I already know what you're going to say, and I 100% agree with you.
I've not seen him once. We've not won a game once where I said, you know what, we won that game because of the coach.
Exactly. We've not gone into a game where we have said, I have confidence that Pat Shurmur is going to out-scheme the opponent. We have not had that at all.
Or even a game where you walk out of it and you say, you know what, man, Pat Shurmur out-coached that dude on the other side.
Yep.
Regardless who it is.
I mean, I've been harping on it for weeks at this point. The play calling has been absolute dog shit. I mean, I'm sure you're going to bring it up, but the shotgun draw on 3rd and 18 when they were planning on going for it on 4th down anyway, inexcusable. I do not care, Weiss. I do not give a shit how bad the pass interference call against Janoris Jenkins was. You already, what are we, 7 weeks in to the NFL season. Discount this week, 6 weeks into the NFL season. How many of those calls have you seen overturned that were obviously wrong?
None. And you know what the crazy thing
about
that is?
You cannot burn a timeout in that situation. I don't care if it matters. I don't care if it matters or not. You're a head coach. You know the likelihood. I mean, Pat Shurmur is an alleged analytics guy. He looks at the numbers. Well, this isn't hard math, Pat. You look around the league and you see the percentage of times that these calls get reversed or overturned. Unless it is egregious, where Janoris Jenkins didn't even touch the guy. Zero contact. You cannot throw that challenge flag for a pass interference. You just can't do it. You can't.
No, listen. The rule is absolute garbage.
It better be gone after this year. But
they need to get rid of it.
Yes.
But at this point, Pat Shurmur has to figure out. But I was going to say is the whole challenging pass interference. Pat Shurmur has been so bad this year
that's
not even at the top of my concern right now.
No, far from it. I'm just pointing it out. And one of the things that frustrates me most, we talk about play calling, right, where you're going to throw on first down, run on second down, and then give your rookie quarterback third and long. Or you know you have a bottom five defense in the league and you're going to defer the coin toss and just throw out your dog shit defense. And on top of that, something that we've been harping on for weeks, the Giants finally have an athletic quarterback. What we saw in the preseason, what we saw when he started against Tampa Bay, is that this guy has better than expected arm strength, better than expected ball placement, and he can use his legs. And you finally have the best running back in the league back, allegedly healthy from his high ankle sprain. Where are the RPOs? Where are the designed runs? The only time Dan Jones is using his legs is when shit breaks down. And even then, he's holding on to the ball for too long. But that's besides the point. We'll talk about his ball security issues later. The play calling has been dog shit. Dog shit.
It's very bad. It's very bad. And not only that, listen, he's not utilizing these players to their strength.
Not at all.
Evan Engram, listen, I know Evan Engram dropped the pass, but...
A couple, but yeah.
The Cardinals were giving up, what, 25 fantasy points?
Which is essentially 100 yards and a touchdown. Dude, I read the stat. They were basically giving up an average of like 6 or 7 receptions, 90 yards, and over a touchdown to opposing tight ends.
So call it 7 for 100 for a, 7 catches, 100 yards, and
yeah,
a touchdown.
Sure.
Point being...
Even 5 for 90 and 0.8 touchdowns. Unexcusable.
You have to attack the Cardinals with your tight end, who is a mismatch for a lot of guys. You didn't do that as much as you should have. This week should have been...
and you know, the only time they did it was with Rhett Ellison, which was the only good play we saw from Daniel Jones all day.
It's mind-boggling to me. And then the third and 18, it just didn't make any sense. First of all, absolving yourself from blame and say, well, the quarterback audibled into it. Even if he did, and maybe he did do that, you don't say that in front of the media.
Yeah, you don't throw him under the bus.
You don't throw your rookie quarterback under the bus, one. Two, it's not just this call. Against New England, he punted on 4th and 2 down 14.
Yep.
Was that a Daniel Jones audible, too? Did Daniel Jones go to the sideline and say, hey, we got to punt the ball?
Yeah.
So this questionable decision-making from Pat Shermer, it just didn't start in Arizona. It's been going on this whole season.
Yep.
And listen, man, you have to have doubts right now. We know the Giants have a talent issue. We know that they have a chronic systemic issue as an organization.
Top down. Where it's
top down, and we get it, and then we can spend an entire day discussing that. But Sunday was a game that they should have won, in my opinion.
Yes.
They didn't face a team. They didn't face New England with the number one defense. They didn't face Minnesota with a great defense and an offense that just has an enormous amount of talent. They faced a team that's sort of in the same tier as them right now.
Yep.
And the score was more respectable than what the game actually was.
Absolutely.
In my opinion. You fall behind. First of all, you come out so flat like that at home. And then throughout the game, questionable decision making after questionable decision making. And you find yourself at 2-5 now. And quite frankly, I mean, looking at the Giants schedule, it's tough to see where the next win is coming.
Yep. For this team. We've gone over the schedule over and over again.
And as the losses continue to pile up, obviously the discussion is going to be had.
The noise is getting louder.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to start talking about, you know, when is enough enough? Or when is it time? Or how many more chances is he going to get? So Pat Shermer, I like him. I thought he was a good hire. Wasn't my original first choice, but I like the hire. But he's not done a good job so far here. And listen, man, this city will chew you up and spit you out very quickly, man.
Yep.
And Pat Shermer better be careful, because the way this season is headed, if this team does not improve, and if this quarterback does not improve, people will call for your head, and who knows what will happen.
Now, here's my biggest concern with, I'll say, the future. You're in year two of Saquon. They've got, what, 6 wins, 7 wins in Saquon's regime. I'll call it Saquon's regime. I think 6 when he's healthy. And he's already got the ankle issues. He's playing the most dangerous position in professional sports. The guy's job is to run in between 5 guys that weigh 300 pounds while 4 other guys who weigh 300 pounds crash down on him. Okay? Daniel Jones in his rookie year right now. The Giants are not going to fire Pat Shermer midseason. Do you agree?
No. I mean,
I just gut feeling, yes or no?
No.
Okay.
No.
So they don't fire him. They ride it out. They make a coaching change in the offseason. You're now in year three of Saquon with your rookie quarterback, who we still have a good chunk of the season left. He's had some flashes. He's done some bad things, some things to improve on, whatever. Second year in the league, second head coach, second offense. So many holes, it's basically impossible to fill in one offseason. So there goes year three of Saquon, year two of Dan Jones. You basically have to hope that Gettleman hits on an unexpectedly high percentage of his draft picks, spends the $90-plus million he's projected to have in free agency wisely, which, based on what he's done so far, the fans should have zero confidence in his ability to do. And on top of that, him and John Mara need to make the proper head coach hire, which, after bringing in Pat Shurmur and the Ben McAdoo disaster, do you have any confidence in them to do that? Probably not. How many more years are we going to waste as a middling franchise in the greatest city in the world? This is the New York Football Giants. There is no excuse, none, for this organization to be as middling as they have been. And we're looking at, you know, we've been saying it for years now. And, you know, at the end of the day, I hope we're wrong. But, I mean, this could be a long, long next two or three years.
Well, we're going on, they won the Super Bowl in 2011. You know, we're closing in on a decade.
Yeah.
Since the last playoff win. A decade. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is 2019. We agree that they're not making the playoffs this year, right? And then there's next year. And if you don't make the playoffs, win a playoff game next year, we're talking a decade.
Yeah.
10 years.
I mean, do you have confidence in Dave Gettleman to spend $90 million in free agency?
Free agency, no.
That's like putting a drunk toddler behind the wheel and telling them to drive 100 miles.
Here's the thing about free agency, though. I know the Giants, first of all, can we stop this? The Giants are not going to have $100 million in cap space.
Correct.
I see that being floated around. They're not. They're going to have somewhere between 60 and 75 million in cap space after cuts. After cuts. And if you cut a player, you're essentially opening up another hole that you have to fill. So, and you might have the resources to fill them with the players you have, but who knows? Point is, 60 to 75 million, which is, if you look at next year, it's sort of the middle of the pack, really. It's not, it's around that, right outside the top 10 range. It's about 11. They might be able to, you know, get inside there depending on what other team do. The point is that the Giants can't go into next year and just spend. I think they have to continue to build this roster through the draft and fill needs with smart contracts. I look at what the Colts do and Chris Ballard and how he handled his cap space. The Colts came into last offseason, they had $118 million in cap space. They didn't spend all of it. They didn't go out and make any high-priced free agent signings. You know, what they did was they built through the draft, they continue to grow from within, and they've done a good job at it. I think that's the approach the Giants sort of have to take here. You have a lot of young players that you're trying to develop and you hope can develop into good players. You go out and you have another strong draft. I think as the trade deadline approaches, and we'll talk about it, you look to sell off some of your expensive vets that you're probably going to end up cutting at the end of the season. You hope that your rookies this year and the guys that you brought in last year continue to develop throughout the season. You go into next offseason, have another strong draft. Yes, you spend some money to plug some holes because you're going to need to. You can't do it all in the draft. And then you go into the draft and you try to see how you can maximize each draft pick. And obviously the holes are a laundry list. The offensive line, they need two new offensive tackles. And they need depth along the offensive line as well. The defensive line, they need edge rushers. I sort of call it the alpha edge. They really need that. They have some good rotational guys in Lorenzo Carter and O'Shane Ximenez, but they need that alpha edge guy. Linebacker, I mean, listen, they need just about anything. They brought in Deion Buchanan, but he's not the long-term answer. They need somebody there. who knows? Ryan Conley's going to be coming back off ACL. We both like him. We think he's a quality starter and can develop into much more. On the back end, it's going to be about development. Can DeAndre Baker turn into a very good cornerback in this league? Can Sam Beal, who I'm excited to watch, I don't know about you, can he step in? Remember, they invested a third-round pick in this guy. So you expect the third-round pick to be a starter. Can he, you know, turn
into a... Can he even get on the field?
Can he get on the field one?
Yeah.
And then can he become a starting caliber corner? And then on the back end, Jabril Peppers has been all right this season. I think we can agree on that. He's done some good, done some bad. But the free safety spot, they need to get a ball hawk back there. So they have a lot of holes. They need to go get real NFL players, really good players. So can Dave Gettleman do that? I certainly am not going to sit here and try to talk you into thinking he can. But this is what the Giants need to do. And sure, they can't fill every, you know, hole in one offseason. And they don't need every hole to be filled for them to be a playoff team, in my opinion. But you have this window right now with Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones, and you hope he turns out to be a franchise quarterback, and you get that window where you can maximize what you have on their rookie deals and hopefully get to the promised land. But there's a lot of work to be done. And yes, Sunday was, I believe, was a lot on the coaching staff, but it also showed us how far the Giants are talent-wise.
Yep.
When Arizona can walk in there, you know, and do what they did.
Yep.
Now, so they have a lot of work to do. They have a lot of holes to fill. And listen, right now all you can do is just hope the young guys you have there can develop. But they need to have a strong offseason.
Yep.
And whether or not Gettleman and Shermer are the right ones, that's a huge question mark right now.
Agree. Before we move on, I wanted to discuss our good friend Dan Duggan, his article on Sterling Shepard in The Athletic today. Did you happen to read it?
I read some quotes about it, and there was some alarming stuff in there.
Yeah.
So I'll let you.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I've been pretty outspoken about how the Giants have handled Sterling Shepard. You know, first concussion, second concussion, how he was allowed back into the game, Giants med staff evaluation, independent league evaluator letting him back in the game, how they've managed him, and how they will manage him going forward. There were two really alarming quotes in Dan Duggan's article. When I called it out on Twitter today and I said alarming, a lot of people were like, oh, is he going to retire? No, that's not what the quotes were about. I'll read the quotes. This is quote number one. Not many people know about the brain. The team doctors don't even know much about the brain, Shepard said. That's where it's a difficult situation. I can see where they're coming from. They want to give my brain time. The second quote. But I even look at it this way. My grandmother has never played a snap in her life, but she had a brain disease. Things like that happen in life. I mean, if that is not the definition of alarming, I don't know what is. We, and maybe not necessarily, no, I mean, we have. We're, I'll say this, we're a very pro player podcast. We always expect and enjoy when a player can capitalize on their success, get that big money contract. But on the other hand, we also hate it when players get hurt, and we don't like to see, you know, the long-term repercussions of some of these types of injuries. Now, this is, I believe, only the fourth documented concussion Sterling Shepard has had. And he had one in high school, one in college, and then two in a four-week period. And this is just basic science, which is why this is alarming. The shorter time period between concussions and the more concussions you have, the more likely they are to happen in the future. And in a sport like football, concussions happen all the time. And it's not just concussions that are bad. The constant hitting of the head, even if it's not technically a concussion, it's just not good for a player moving forward. The team doctors don't even know that much about the brain. I can assure you that's false. They know plenty about the brain, and they know that two concussions in a four-week period is not good. And the fact that I think we can both agree here with the quarterback in his rookie season, with the number of holes on this Giants roster, this team is not ready to compete this year. And listen, maybe this is just my opinion, and I get it. If the medical staff, quote-unquote, clears him, Pat Shurmur is going to play him. But to have two concussions in a four-week span, and not only that, the player was stayed in the game after receiving those concussions, after you just extended him for 4 years and a lot of money, that's concerning to me. I don't understand what the end goal here is. I don't understand how a player could be so naive about the brain injuries. I don't know whether he's just trying to convince himself or if he's genuinely that ignorant about the side effects of brain injuries and concussions. But Sterling Shepard, I'll say this, he's in a very interesting situation that, you know, you may see some football players in, but he's certainly in the minority, where he has a wife who is a supermodel worth over $10 million. Football's not necessarily a means to an end for him. And if these concussions keep up, and again, he's got a one-year-old kid, another one on the way, just something to keep an eye on. Because regardless of whether or not you believe the science behind concussions, when it happens with the frequency it's happening to Sterling Shepard, you have to worry about, one, the player's safety and health in the long term, as well as you just saw Andrew Luck retire due to chronic injuries. You know, that player's willingness to keep going when money's not an issue and the team sucks and he's already made a good amount of money in his career. But listen, I mean, I spoke to a couple other beat writers who were like, yeah, those quotes were bad, alarming at the very worst, ignorant at the least. I don't understand where he's coming from there.
The Giants just shut Sterling Shepard down for the rest of the year.
I agree.
They should place him on season-ending IR, and they should just not play him. And it's not because he can't get clear from the concussion protocol and he can't return to the field. It's because two in the span that he got him is very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
It's because what happens is him coming back, and if he gets a third at any point this season, three concussions in 1 year. There's a guy that played for the Redskins called Jordan Reed.
Yeah.
Who is probably not going to play again for a multitude of reasons.
And how many concussions did he suffer in his NFL career? I think it's upwards of eight.
Yeah, he suffered a lot. And he was a good player and a great tight end. And
some would argue even better than great. He was very, very good.
And he's sort of, you know, getting ready to retire, in our opinion, and what it looks like. So the Giants have shut Sterling Shepard down, it's really a no-brainer for me. I don't think he should be practicing.
Pun unintended. No-brainer.
It's you can't. This is a huge risk. And the thing about the concussion is, it's not like, you know, when a guy suffers one, you know, he gets cleared, he's able to come back. But when he suffers two, the timetable, you can't sort of, you know, put a timetable on it where it's like this is a 2 to 4 week thing. No.
I'll say this. If he's playing again before the bye, they should launch this medical staff into the sun. You agree?
So, yeah. And I was counting Jordan Reed's concussions. 13 concussions since 2010. That's including his time at Florida.
Right.
The point is that, listen, this is a very dangerous situation for Sterling Shepard, and it's just too big of a risk to put him back on the field, regardless if he clears the protocol or not. Just shut him down for the season. Put him on season-ending IR. Give him some time, you know, and again, if he comes back next year and he suffers another one, then I mean, it's out of your control. But what you can control right now is two concussions in 2 weeks. I can't risk him getting a third in that span of a season. So you have to shut him down, and it's a huge risk from the perspective of the Giants and from Sterling Shepard's health to put him on the field again this year. It's yep. it's a huge risk. This is not a joke. This is not a sprained ankle that he can play through. This is not, you know, this is a serious situation, and IR is the right move.
Yep. By the way, so I mean, now that people get a little live look into it, I forgot to tweet out for questions, but I just did. If you want to go retweet it, so people can hit us with some questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Giants sign Deion Buchanan today.
Deion Buchanan.
Yes.
I like the move. I like the move.
I agree. I mean, listen, it's very simple. It is a move where the player has familiarity with the defensive coordinator, with the coordinator's system. You're not just taking a rant. Yeah, best years with Betcher. Now, we're not expecting him to come in and be some fucking all-star, you know, prove to us that he's back and then get some massive contract extension in the offseason. He's here because the Giants need bodies, and getting a player like Buchanan, who has been productive and is familiar with Betcher's system, getting him in there, and it's better than just promoting some guy off the street or off the practice squad who has no fucking clue what he's doing. Do I expect him to transform the Giants defense? Absolutely not. Neither do you, nor should anyone listening to this podcast. He was a quality player. His production has declined, but the Giants have nothing to lose by bringing him in here. So, ta-da, he's here. A lot of people were banging the drum for him. I was in favor of bringing him in here. I think I was in favor of bringing him in here a couple of years ago when he was a free agent. But I think both of us are glad he's here, and we'll see what he can bring.
Yeah, they desperately needed an inside linebacker, and this was almost the perfect situation. Familiarity with the defense, had his best years of his career with James Betcher, knows the system, won't take long for him to get on the field, might be on the field on Sunday. It's really easy.
Yep.
It's simple as that.
No-brainer.
This is a low risk with the potential to be some sort of reward. So
I love how you said some sort of reward, because if you said high reward, I was gonna jump in. Yeah, no, exactly. Some sort of reward.
Some sort of. Listen, he can throw in the dart. And if he earns the right to come back on a 1 year deal next year.
Right.
Again, it's about finding something right now.
It's a win-win. It really is a win-win, right? The Giants either get a productive player this year that can help their defense, potentially a player who likes it enough here and is successful enough here that he wants to re-sign at a team-friendly contract, or Deion Buchanan comes in here in a system that he's familiar in already and has some sort of productive season that allows some other team to go out there and pay him. So if there's any situation he wants to be in, it's in this one. I mean, you know, of course he doesn't want to be a free agent or released or cut or whatever, but listen, if there's any team he wanted to go to, it's probably the Giants for those reasons.
Yep.
All right, that's Deion Buchanan. Some trades are flying around. Emmanuel Sanders got moved. Mohamed Sanu got moved. I love the Sanu trade for the Patriots. I'm very curious how Shanahan uses Sanders in San Francisco. They desperately need receiver help. You know, there's obviously some speculation that AJ Green might get moved in the coming days, weeks. The Giants are sellers. And unfortunately for the Giants, they do not have too many players that a team would be, you know, chomping at the bit for. I think we've both spoken at length about Janoris Jenkins. He's the obvious move. Mm-hmm. That might not happen right away. When is the trade deadline, by the way?
October 29th.
October 29th. So that's going to be
next
a tough
week.
Yep, next week. So that's going to be a tough one. Let's hope Sam Beal can get healthy. But Janoris Jenkins, obviously the prime candidate to get moved. You know, if the Giants can get rid of some of these abominable contracts for a conditional seventh, I think we would both take it. Alec Ogletree, Golden Tate. No one's taking Solder. He's not going anywhere. Those are some of the names that I would like to see, if not moved, at least attempted to get moved. Whether or not we find that out is TBD, but who are you looking for the Giants to move at the deadline?
Janoris Jenkins.
Yep.
I really think that Philadelphia and the Giants should come together and come to an agreement. the Eagles need a cornerback, and the Giants have one that they could potentially move. And I think that's a perfect scenario. Another guy that's an interesting one that I brought up and didn't get a lot of positive feedback from fans was Dalvin Tomlinson. Guy's in his third year, entering the final year of his deal. Mm-hmm. The Giants have Dexter Lawrence, have B.J. Hill. We've seen some of R.J. McIntosh, too. Gettleman has drafted, what, four defensive tackles in the last two drafts?
Yep.
That's including the guy they took from Syracuse last year in the seventh round. I think it was Chris Slayton, I think his name is. Point being is that they have bodies there. So if a team, and I threw out Green Bay, who's needs interior defensive line help because they struggle against the run, if they come calling for Dalvin Tomlinson, what is the price? And I put a fourth round on it. I don't know how the Giants view Dalvin Tomlinson. I don't know if he's someone they're looking to move or would be as willing as I think they should be to move him, but that's a name out there. But the obvious ones, Ogletree, Janoris Jenkins. But the problem is right now, the Giants are too, and I hate to say this, but from their perspective, they're looking at it. If we win these next two games, at the very least,
oh, I hate this fucking team.
We could be tied in the loss column, or will be tied in the win column with the Dallas Cowboys because Dallas is a bye. So if the Giants go to Detroit and win, and then they beat the Cowboys on Monday Night Football, they're 4-5, and the Cowboys will be 4-4. So they're looking at it as we're not even thinking about selling. Now, if they lose to Detroit on Sunday, which I think they will, then it changes everything because then you're 2-6. And with the trade deadline being next Tuesday, I think, or next Wednesday, at that point, you know, you got to be on the phone, and Janoris Jenkins has to be moved, in my opinion. And then with Sam Beal eligible to play in week 9, you're going to have this week and then next week to get him ready. And plus, you have some other guys that you can play as Sam Beal gets up to speed.
Yep.
But the Giants have to see what they have in this third round pick because they invested a really high pick in him. So he needs to get on the field.
Yep. All right. You want to get into some questions? Anything else you want to cover?
Nope. Let's get into some questions.
All right. From Phil, do you think Shurmur and Gettleman would get fired as a pair? No, I don't.
I think if and I told you this theory, I think if shit gets really bad and they finish worse than 5-11, I think it has to be on the table. I think Gettleman will
get the Coughlin. I think it should already be on the table, but yeah.
I think Gettleman will get the Coughlin treatment and sort of resign. And then Pat Shurmur will get fired.
Okay. I'll disagree because I think Gettleman is attached to Dan Jones, and I think he could convince John Merritt he needs at least another year. But I disagree with that, but that's my thinking. That's my line of thinking.
I already have this outside theory that retirement is not off the table with Dave Gettleman, regardless.
So let's hope he's in his Cape Cod backyard.
Really, he's 76 years old.
Just give it up, dude, please. Producer Chris says, what's up? What's up, Chris? From Monty, what are some of your favorite coaching candidates if the Giants fire Shurmur?
I'm not.
I mean, listen, the only one that's been thrown around so far, and it's because he's turned a program around and he's got Giants connections, is Matt Rhule, but it's just way too early for me to
dive into that. Is that the Baylor coach?
Yeah, it's the Baylor coach.
I'll give you one.
Okay.
I'll give you one.
Don't say Lincoln Riley.
No.
Okay.
No. That's not happening.
Thank you.
Eric Bieniemy.
Okay.
Offensive coordinator, Kansas City Chiefs. He's a disciplinarian.
I read up on him. Would be an obvious move, yeah.
And don't ask me why I read up on Eric Bieniemy, but I did. Disciplinarian, good offensive mind. Andy Reid loves him. A lot of people that are successful head coaches in the NFL speak highly of him. But I'm just going to throw that out there. But
yep. From Amaro, lack of talent, obviously a factor, but you still believe Shurmur can be the guy? I do not.
I have my doubts, man, and we laid it out earlier. If you didn't hear it, go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
Beginning of the show. It's you have to have doubts, man. He's not done a good job.
Yep. From Mike, why does 90% of the fan base hate Shurmur, but those same people give Gettleman no blame? How are you supposed to win with this defense and a rookie quarterback? Starts from the top. I don't know. You know, I am not one of those people. I've been blaming Gettleman since the day he got hired.
Yeah, I think when our anger is a lot towards Sunday's game.
Yeah.
And how what happened and how we felt like he didn't do a good job and how he hasn't done a good job this whole season.
Yep.
But I said it before. I mean, the Giants' issues are much bigger than Pat Shurmur and James Betcher. There's serious organizational problems that those are you can't hide behind it.
Yep.
But the fan base having this connection to Dave Gettleman, I think it's a lot about them wanting to believe that's
exactly what it is.
That he is the right person, wanting to believe that every decision he's made makes sense since he's been hired here. Because a coach, you can just go hire another one, right?
Mm-hmm.
You fire a GM, it's sort of like a longer process, right? And I think a lot of that belief in Gettleman comes from the fact that they're scared of what that longer process and how long it's going to take.
Yeah.
Because typically, when people fire their GM, what does that mean? It's because he hasn't done a good job. They don't have good players. So they have to go hire another GM.
Yep.
And Giant fans, the ones that sort of, I say, cape for Dave Gettleman, are sort of scared of that realization that, hey, maybe this guy isn't the right guy. And it boggles my mind that people get mad when we question what he's done. He's not done a good job, man. There's a lot of questionable decisions out there that we can highlight through the last, 24, 26 months, however long he's been in charge.
Yep. And we have. From Kamal, on a scale of drinking bleach to putting acid in your eyes, how confident are you in Gettleman adding the right talent to this team come free agency when he has a boatload of cash to spend?
Went
over it. I'm not confident. It's like giving a drunk toddler the keys to the car.
You cannot build through free agency.
We
went through it in 2016.
Yep.
We went through it. Jerry Reese went out and spent money on the defensive line and got Damon Harrison and got JPP on a one-year deal and got Olivier Vernon and Paige Norris Jenkins. And it might work out for 1 year, but you can't do that. It's not possible. Free agency is sort of the dessert to the dinner. The dinner is the draft. You have to build your roster through the draft. It's great that they're going to have cap space. They should have cap space given how lack of talent they have and who they traded and let walk out the door. So they should have cap space, but you cannot build your roster with the salary through free agency. You cannot do it. I don't care if you have $100 million. You cannot do it. You cannot do it.
From Bruce, over under on how many chairs John Mara assaults after we only win 3 games this year and get embarrassed on Monday Night Football by the Cowboys.
Hey man, we lose 3 games this year. John Mara we win 3 games this year. John Mara better throw something else.
It better be Dave Gettleman.
yes. Hey, you win three games. Whew.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to go.
From Nick.
Unless we've just lowered our standards with what the Giants are about, then in that case, Dave Gettleman deserves a contract extension.
From Nick, thoughts on Marcus Golden. I think he's been getting a lot of cleanup sacks where the QB has been in the pocket for 4 to 5 seconds already. He's playing well, but not as good as people think, in my opinion.
Well, I think Marcus Golden is put in a position where he's asked to be the
guy.
I call it the alpha edge. Yeah. And he's not that. He's a good good Robin to a Batman. With that said, I think he's a keeper. It's not somebody that I will let leave.
Depends on the contract, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen. We talk about this. You cannot build through free agency, but I think that Marcus Golden, if James Betcher is still the coordinator next year, is a guy that should come back. I don't agree with that assessment that he's getting a lot of coverage sacks. I think he has, but I think he's done a good job this year. He's definitely someone that I think the Giants should look to keep and should, if the price is right, obviously. But, I like Marcus Golden a lot.
Yep. All right, let's do two more. From Tim, knowing our other imperative needs on defense, if an impact offensive player like Jerry Jeudy fell to us in the draft, would you take him? you got to go offensive line. Got to go pass rusher. I'm sorry. You can't justify taking a receiver unless you wind up with multiple first-round picks.
Here's my theory. I always say draft the player, not the position. The Giants are going to be in a situation where they're going to be picking high in the draft, and there's a lot of good defensive players, and there's going to be some good offensive linemen there too.
I think we spoke about the potential to trade back with a quarterback needy team.
So we talk about that pipe dream, right? We say you're picking in that top 10.
What he should have done in 18.
There's three quarterbacks potentially that could go in the top 10. I think three are a lock, in my opinion, to go in the top 10. If the Giants are there and somebody calls and asks you to move back, first of all, pick up the phone, okay? Second of all, yes, moving back, accumulating more picks, would be the smart thing to do. But listen, this team has to continue to build on their lines, man. They have no depth, and their two tackles have been a big disappointment this year and are on the bad side of 30.
Yep.
So,
From Drew, I believe that's his name. I would consider this year a learning experience for Dan Jones, but come next year and the year after that, DJ's third, Saquon's fourth. Do you think the Giants have a legitimate shot at a Super Bowl?
Well, it depends where Daniel Jones is.
Yeah. I mean, it's just too up in the air to really decide.
Listen, I'll give you – we haven't really touched on Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones has a ball security problem.
Yes, he does. Let's talk about it.
And that ball security problem is not interceptions. I think those are – right now you can learn from interceptions. He's aggressive with the ball, and we like that. I want him to be aggressive.
Here's what I love about Dan Jones, and I say this with love. He is like a mini Eli clone where early in his career, I think he's too stupid to be afraid of getting hit. Which you like if he's not fumbling the ball. You also want him to use his legs a little bit more, but unlike Sam Darnold, he's not seeing ghosts, right? No. He's
Can I say something about that seeing ghosts thing?
Yeah.
First of all,
I have a take on it. It may be a little hot, but you can go first.
Listen, I will say this about Sam Darnold. I liked Sam Darnold coming out of college, and he was ranked high in my board for quarterbacks. But he has not impressed me at all since coming out. And he's played, 20 games and 18 games?
I think less.
I don't know how many games. 17, 16. He's played at least a full season right now. And he's not been impressive. He's a shaky guy to me. But that whole I'm seeing ghost things, first of all, he's got to be smarter and know that he's mic'd up and not say something that you know could bite you in your ass, one. Two, who gives a fuck?
Thank you. I mean, okay. Here's my take on it, and it's along the lines of who gives a fuck. Any coach or coordinator with a brain that is facing Sam Darnold is going to watch that Patriots game, and mic'd up or not, they're going to see exactly what the Patriots did, and they're going to try to replicate it, right? You didn't need Sam Darnold going, "I'm seeing ghosts," to understand that Cover Zero had him shook, right? Who gives a fuck if he said, "I'm seeing ghosts" or not? Fact of the matter is, you got the tape. And if you have half a brain, you're going to know how to attack him. And for Sam Darnold, great. Now you know what you need to work on, what your fucking offensive line and your head coach needs to work on, because that was just an abominable performance all around last night. But it doesn't matter. It literally does not matter.
Daniel Jones, the fumbling problem. He needs to work on ball security on that. And that comes from pocket awareness. He has to anticipate pressure. He does not do a good job with that. And it will come. Listen, this is his fifth start. And that first start, it was a great thing. Like, it was awesome to see him lead that comeback. But it was also terrible because the standard was set then. And we forgot that he's a rookie quarterback. Or a lot of people forgot that he's a rookie quarterback. He's going through the struggles. His receivers can't get any separation. He's going through the grind. His head is probably spinning, and maybe he's seeing ghosts too, but he's just not going to admit it to national television. But he's got to protect the football. It's a huge concern right now. I don't care about interceptions. I think, you know, you can sit here and dissect interceptions all you want for a rookie in his first year. It doesn't matter to me. But fumbling the ball the way he is that is not no bueno. I said this. I think Daniel Jones has exceeded my expectations so far for what I expected him to be in his first year. He's more advanced in certain areas that I didn't think he would be this early. But he still has a lot to a lot of boxes he needs to check off on. Ball security is a huge thing right now. And he has to protect the ball. He's a smart kid. He has a high football IQ. That's why I'm not worried about him having to learn a new offense if come be it next year. I really don't care. Because he's a really, really smart, like high football IQ guy. But gotta protect that football, man. That's the fumbles are no good.
I gotta see more flashes. I do. You know, I agree. Listen, the ball security issues, it's a problem. It's fixable. I mean, outside of some of the throws that he made against the Bucks, like, I need more of the throw that he made to Rhett Ellison this weekend. And it's these things are sort of few and far between after the Bucks game.
Let me ask you this. So we'll do, like, a lot of people ask me this too. Like, what do you think about Daniel? In terms of him being a franchise quarterback, where is that percentage of it? Like, how much has he completed so far? Like, for me, it's 40. I'll put it at 47%.
That's really, really high.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
To me, it's 47%.
We're talking about a guy. How many games has he started? He didn't start five games. And of those five, I mean, listen, and I'm not saying that all of it's his fault. I mean, listen, his offensive line sucks. He doesn't have a number one receiver. The defense is horrendous. And he's being hampered by his head coach. And I'm using air quotes right now, his offensive coordinator in Mike Shula.
let me reiterate.
Fine.
I'm talking in terms of it's a meter that can go up and back down.
Okay.
So right now it's sitting at 47%. Right? It can go back down throughout the season. But right now, I'm 47% sure Daniel Jones is a franchise quarterback.
I think you're about 37% too high.
Well, you have that first game was a historic game. And I left that game thinking I'm at 75% that we just, you know, hit the lottery and this guy's going to be the real deal. That it's gone back down to earth.
Yeah, but like you can't, like you're setting that so high. Like fucking Matt Flynn had a 5-touchdown game that landed him a monster contract. Like, yeah, like guys are going to have like one good game. But this isn't me saying that like Dan Jones is a bust. Like I've been very, very outspoken about like this is like a learning year. Like you take the good, you take the bad, but like, what, like, outside of, like, all right, he made some really, really, really good throws in the Bucks game. Like, he had that throw to Rhett Ellison. And given all of the things that he's hamstrung with, like I mentioned, his coaching, his offensive line, his receivers, like, you got to give me something more. And I'm not saying that, like, my meter is at zero, and it's not going to be it's certainly not going to be at zero at the end of the year. Because I think judging a quarterback after 14 games is just way too small of a sample size, especially given what the Giants are right now. But it's just hilarious to me that you look around the league and you like look at some of these other quarterbacks that were drafted in 16, 17, 18, and how quickly some Giants fans are to be like, oh, LOL, he had a bad game, what a fucking bust. But then you look at Dan Jones, who's had like one quality game so far, and people are like saying, oh, he's the franchise guy, got to give him time. Like, yeah, he's done some good things, but like, 47% after five games? That's way too high.
That's not high, man. That's halfway. That's halfway.
He is not halfway there.
He's at the halfway point. He can go back. Remember, it's not like it's complete. He can go from 47 down to 27, right? I'm not. That's not the point. The point is that he's accomplished half of it. Now he has to complete it without taking steps back, right? Continue to develop without regressing.
Okay, let's do this. Let's turn this into a bit. Okay. We'll call it the Dan Jones meter.
Okay.
We'll do it every podcast.
Every podcast, after every game.
You're 47 right now.
we have to take a lot of things into consideration.
Of course,
a four interception game against the New England Patriots without any key weapons, it's tough to really judge him based on that.
Of course,
right? And then, but at the same time, I thought against Washington throwing two picks back to back on the same type of play, that didn't sit well with me.
Right,
the ball security is a huge concern for me, but at the same time, leading that kind of comeback against the Bucks, and I would have felt this way even if they would have lost that game. I feel like, absolutely.
I mean, he was in a big hole to begin with.
So I put it at 47%, the meter. We'll call it the meter.
The meter. My meter's at 14%, my meter.
The Daniel meter.
Yes, the Daniel meter.
Yes.
That'll be the episode name, the Daniel meter.
It's at 47% for me. Remember, it can go back next year. Next week, it might be down to 40. Okay? But so far, I feel comfortable. But I got a question for you now.
Okay.
Sam Darnold or Daniel Jones, after everything you know, who are you taking?
I can't. It's like, again, like, because you absolutely cannot. Like, and first of all, let's get rid of this bullshit revisionist history here. Let me ask you this. Do you remember where I had Sam Darnold ranked on my quarterback list in the 2018 draft?
Fourth.
Thank you. Everyone thinks I'm on my knees for Sam Darnold. I'm not. So
I had him second or third? I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, and listen, again, fine. You want to knock me for something, knock me for Josh Rosen, even though I think, you know, again, he has had the two worst quarterback situations back-to-back years. But, like,
you can knock me all you want. I just don't give a shit. I'm not going to stop from having an opinion.
I mean, that's fine. But the whole thing is, like, you just mentioned, like, Dan Jones having four interceptions against the Patriots, which we both agree is a generational defense. You look at the Jets, probably have a worse offensive line than the Giants, probably have a worse receiving tight end running back situation than the Giants, probably have an equally bad coaching situation as the Giants. And by the way, they spent a shitload of money in free agency and didn't do anything to upgrade either of their defensive fronts, I'll call them. Right.
But you know what pissed me off is that since Sam Darnold has been drafted, he's been sort of, you know, inserted into this realm of franchise quarterback, and he is saving the Jets, and he's bringing the Jets back, and he's going to take over New York, right? Daniel Jones gets drafted and we all rip him and hate him. Well, has Sam Darnold had a game like Daniel Jones had in his debut?
Yeah. Now, he did. He's last year he had like two really, really good games. This year against the Cowboys, he had a really good game.
Really, really good. And what Daniel Jones did in week three against Tampa.
Obviously, it's not going to be up to par, but considering a rookie quarterback, yes, he had two really good games last year, and he had one very good game against the Cowboys this past year. But again, you're talking about two guys who have the smallest of sample sizes for quarterbacks. It is way too early. And listen, and you have to also consider the narrative, where everyone, including us, and really anyone that watched football, was basically saying, and we said this a million times, that 2018 was the year to draft a quarterback. Everyone loved Baker, Jackson, Darnold, Rosen. Some people liked Allen, some people didn't. Bottom line is, that's why that narrative exists of Sam Darnold, that he is like some franchise savior. Now, again, you're talking about, and this is why you can't make the comparison. You're talking about two guys who, Sam Darnold is still 22 years old, by the way. You have two guys who are 22, 23 years old, who have terrible coaching situations, have terrible roster situations, and both have had, in their very small sample sizes, very good games and very bad games. Like, I don't understand why we're living in some vacuum where a guy's drafted and all of a sudden he's some franchise savior, right? These things can't be determined in one year.
That's who people anointed him as. I remember the tweets. Listen, I didn't like the Saquon Barkley pick either, but it was imagine passing on Saquon Barkley or imagine passing on Sam Darnold for a running back. I remember those tweets.
You're talking about Evan Silva right now. I already know which tweet you're talking about.
It was a lot of people.
But that goes more towards the value prop than it does franchise savior.
It's on both sides. I saw a lot of Giant fans that were really animated and going after Sam Darnold yesterday, but they were like that because everyone just anointed Sam Darnold as this savior and as this guy that...
Seems like they're a little insecure.
Well, what they're saying is, hold on, you told me this guy was going to be is bringing the Jets back, and it's Broadway Sam or whatever the fuck they call them, and he's going to do these great things to the Jets, and they're going to the playoffs this year. I heard a lot of that this year. I heard a lot of it before the season started, and Sam Darnold's going to take that next step. Well, we haven't seen it yet, and if Sam Darnold's first 16 games where he's thrown 20 touchdowns and 20 interceptions, and if those were Daniel Jones's first 16 games, the narrative will be much different between the two quarterbacks. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
We're not fair when we discuss these two quarterbacks.
Don't say we.
I'm not saying we. I'm saying the general public who talks about the NFL draft and discusses the NFL draft. It's much different. We look at it at a different lens. And a lot of it goes to how we evaluate quarterbacks in the pre-draft process. We knew the pre-draft evaluations on Daniel Jones were very, very bad. There were only a few number of people that thought that he was going to, that he's going to be a good franchise quarterback. And those people, you know, aren't exactly the new wave of draft analysts and gurus that we have. A lot of them are guys that have been around the NFL much longer. Gil Brandon, remember his comparison to Peyton Manning. Jim Nagy, who runs the Senior Bowl. So my point is that we don't look at these guys through the same lens. And I don't think that that's really fair. Because when Sam Darnold was drafted, and listen, I would have had no problem if the Giants would have drafted Sam Darnold, right? I was fine with him being their quarterback one. I liked him more than you liked him. But when he was drafted and he was called all these things and he was, you know, projected to take this next leap this year, he hasn't done it yet. And we're still waiting on that next step. When you told us it was going to happen, I'm just saying.
It seems like you're more mad at the narrative than, again, like, people need to look at things in a vacuum. And it's just not what's happening.
Do you know who has taken that next step? Josh Allen.
I'm shocked you went with Josh Allen instead of Lamar Jackson.
Well, I knew Lamar Jackson is just a special, special player.
Okay, but there's no doubt that he took the biggest step of that class.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. This was more about the quarterbacks that the people looked at and said the Giants passed on instead of taking.
But again, like, you have to look at someone like Josh Allen in a vacuum, right? He went to right now. He's got a good head coach. He's got a very good defense, and he's got a GM who realized, hey, this is a guy with a really strong arm. And instead of going out there and giving him the fucking Kelvin Benjamins of the world to just go up and get balls, let's go a little smaller, let's go a little faster, and let's get guys who can actually run to the ball that Josh Allen throws, because we all know that he's got accuracy issues. Again,
Josh Allen's offensive line is not as great. Is not great. Is it better than the Jets' offensive line right now?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it can be.
And it's better than the Giants. But again, like, a lot, so much of these guys taking the next step has to do with their situation. Like, do you actually, listen, regardless of whether or not Josh Rosen can be a franchise quarterback, do you agree that part of his miserable first 2 years in the league is his situation, both in Arizona and both in Miami? Absolutely. You'd be ignorant not
to think
that.
Can I be honest about Josh Rosen? I think he's broken.
Me too. Absolutely.
And I don't think it's fixable.
Listen, hand up. If I was wrong about Josh Rosen, hand up. But that's not my point. My point is
there's no way of I don't think Josh Rosen will ever become a franchise quarterback, primarily because I think of the situations that he was thrown into.
Exactly.
Into Arizona with Steve Wilkes, who was just absolute garbage, and GM that was just been, I don't know how he's still employed. And then a year later, he gets traded and Kyler Murray comes in, and now he goes to Miami, and Miami just an absolute tank job, and he gets benched and then starts. I think Josh Rosen is broken, and I'll never be able to prove that Josh Rosen could have been a franchise quarterback.
And I think that's probably our frustration. So you go ahead.
And I'll take that L. That's fine. You want to clown me on Josh Rosen? I don't care. You know, like I said, but there's no way of me proving to you that Josh Rosen would have been a franchise quarterback if put in the right situation. But the one thing that just bothers me about it is that when people sit up there, right, and they say, you know, because of their pre-draft evaluation on a guy, the sort of meter or sort of the the ceiling on how high we're willing to give them is based on that, right? And it's not fair. Daniel Jones is a rookie, right? And he's struggling, right? And every time he struggles, the response from a lot of people is different than when a guy like Sam Darnold struggles.
See,
than
I when a guy like I disagree. I think when Dan Jones struggles, people are like, okay, like whatever, no big deal, it's expected. But with Sam Darnold, like again, you have to you're talking about guys like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson who have made the next steps. Yeah, because their situation was perfect for it. Sam Darnold had a foot injury last year, had mono this year. Adam Gase is a fucking jackass. They fired their GM this offseason and replaced him very late after free agency this year. Like again, and that's the I'll call it both the fun and the frustrating part about professional football is that we have these debates, right? We do it every offseason. We do it during the season. This quarterback, that quarterback. The fact of the matter is, and we just spoke about this with Josh Rosen, there's just some situations you're never going to know, and there's some situations that are just going to take way more time to pan out. And with guys like Lamar Jackson, who has probably a top three head coach in the league, a very, very good GM, and just a situation...
an offensive coordinator in Greg Roman, who yes, should become a head coach.
Exactly.
I don't know why this guy hasn't got a head coaching job yet.
And a very good defense, right? Like these guys, some of them get put in the perfect situation that allows them to utilize their strengths and then build on their weaknesses, and coaches that can fit the scheme around them and GMs that know how to put a contending team around them. And then there's
But Lamar has taken that next step forward.
100%. But
I'm still waiting for that marginal step from Sam Darnold.
Okay, but again, like you're talking about, we're seven games into the season. The guy missed, what, four with mono and played a fifth with onset mono. Like again, like these are like you're looking at it just like too black and white. Like there's a gray area with all of these guys. Like who's to say that if Lamar Jackson was in his second year on the New York Jets right now, that he wouldn't be having a miserable season? These are things that we just don't know.
I think they're two different. The Lamar Jackson discussion is different. I think Lamar Jackson.
Fine, Josh Allen on the Jets would be miserable right now.
I mean, what would Sam Darnold be on the Bills? Would they be 5-1?
Probably not. But again, a lot of that's their defense. They certainly don't have a prolific offense. Again, it's about the situation. It's about the team composition. It's about the coaching.
I get the situation is, but I think that what happens is that, and this is sort of Twitter's fault because it gives a lot of people that
absolutely Twitter's fault.
We just call, you know, when players come out, we just put them in this category, and we just are guaranteeing that this is the guy, and this is going to be with the case of Sam Darnold, they have found their guy. He's going to take over in New York. We heard all of that, right? And we're 16 games into it, and I'm still waiting for Sam Darnold to not look like a rookie. And when you ask the question, well, we need more time. Well, you didn't need more time when you just put him on this pedestal and, you know, called him the king of New York and he's going to take over New York.
All right, so blame the media. The Jets didn't do that.
That I'm not blaming the Jets. I'm blaming the people that do this.
Okay. Well, then you know what? We're part of the problem too.
And that's my point. And I owe people, right, an apology for the way I reacted to Daniel Jones.
Well, that's TBD.
It's early, but I feel like I am going to be wrong about this.
And we want to be.
And I do want to be, yes. Yes. But I think that going forward, it'll be a different me when it comes to the NFL draft.
Okay. And you know what? Because I think that's something that we should both look forward to and work on.
Yes, and we're gonna see how this season play out. We're gonna watch Daniel. Sam Darnold's not gonna play the New England Patriots every week, right? They're done with New England this year.
Yep.
Okay. Who do they got next week?
I don't even know. But again, that's the thing. Like he balls out against the Cowboys and then puts up a stinker against the Patriots, and all of a sudden the narrative is that he's not a franchise quarterback. He sucks. He's not fixable.
I get to a point. Yes, I was reading tweets, and I was just watching people just go at it back and forth, and Jet fans and Giant fans and even Bills fans got into it. And I just sat back and I watched, And at the end, and because the, listen, the Monday Night Football game was not worth watching one bit. I mean, that game was over. You know, by the time the
people. By the way, I think I've brought this up before, but I own the Patriots defense in fantasy.
And so I, do I.
I was. I all right. I gotta. I'm sorry. And I hate when people do this, but I'm about to do it. Just looking at my team last week, I had. Hold on. Let me go. Week 7. I had Matt Ryan 2.5 points. Julio 9. Golden Tate 8. Cooper 9. Ingram 5, Max 6, Andrews 3, Butker 8. I needed 13 points from the Patriots defense, who delivered me 25. They are, we throw this term around, Weiss, this is a generational defense.
Yes.
This is better than last year's Bears by a mile.
I won my game last night by 9 points. I started Kyler Murray, Le'Veon Bell, Melvin Gordon, Thielen, Thomas, Hooper, Carson, the kicker from Arizona, Zane Gonzalez. The Patriots were my leading score.
Me too.
25 points.
And it's not the first week they've been my leading score.
Not at all.
5-2 not first at all, in the league.
But again, my point is that we are so quick to put people on a pedestal and write people off. It's just the wrong way of thinking. And I always see people, even the best of the best, they watch these quarterbacks from a different lens. They don't critique them from the same lens, because a part of them just believes that what they predicted, that they want to believe that all that work they put in the offseason and watching these quarterbacks or watching this prospect, they want to believe they're right. So it's a different lens. And I see it all the time, from the guys at the top who are making millions to the guys who are just bloggers at the bottom. I see it everywhere.
Yep.
And it's not fair.
Absolutely.
And right. What that ends up happening is you get what we saw yesterday, where people just shitting on Sam Darnold, and when he plays well, you got people shitting on the other side. It's just, it's terrible.
Yeah, it sucks. Hour and 10. That's where we're at.
The creation of the Danometer. I'm at 47%.
You want it Dan-O-meter or the Dan-meter?
The Dan-O-meter.
The Dan-O-meter. Okay. The denometer.
There you go.
Okay. 1 hour and 11 minutes. Probably our longest episode of the season. This is a fun one. All right. That's it. Let's wrap it up. Thanks for those who submitted questions. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Unsubscribe, resubscribe, 5 stars. Thank you guys for listening. Shout out to Overlay DFS for another sponsorship. And that's it. We are out. Go Giants. We'll talk to you guys after the Lions game.
Peace.